Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Who controls open source? We have that question and that story, plus a Roman storm of tornado cash, which kind of sounds like a weird film. But first, World War V. Russia tries to make a sudden advance in Ukraine before Trump-Putin summit. Grabbing this originally from Reuters, but we will include the archive.is link. Russian forces have made the sudden thrust in eastern Ukraine near the coal mining town of Dobropilia, a move that may be an attempt to increase pressure on Kiev to give up land as the U.S. and Russian presidents prepare to meet. Ukraine's authoritative deep state war map showed that Russian forces had advanced by at least 6 miles north in two prongs in recent days, part of their drive to take full control of Ukraine's Donetsk region. The advance is one of the most dramatic in the last year, although military analysts said the Russians using small groups of soldiers to try and establish footholds, and that it was uncertain if they could maintain their positions in the face of Ukrainian pushback. Deep State said the Russians had surged forward near three villages on a section of the front line, which Moscow was trying to encircle by exploiting Kiev's lack of manpower. The situation quite chaotic as the enemy, having found gaps in the defense, is infiltrating deeper, trying to quickly consolidate and accumulate forces for further advancement, Deep State said on its Telegram channel. U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are expected to discuss a possible deal to end the war in Ukraine when they meet in Alaska on Friday. And as we come to you, that's about 48 hours, but by the time you are hearing this, it'll be a lot closer. Unconfirmed media reports say Putin has told Trump he wants Ukraine to hand over part of the Donetsk region that Russia does not control. The Russian Defense Ministry said units of its army grouping center had improved their positions on the edge of the front line. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky confirmed that groups of Russian soldiers had advanced about 10 kilometers in several places. They're without equipment, only weapons in their hands. Some have already been found, partly destroyed, partly captured. We will find and destroy the rest in the near future, he said, sounding like the lame Christian Bale Batman that he thinks he is. Remember, this dude was a sketch comedian. Please see footage of him playing the piano with his member, like all good heads of state do. We will include links, James. Of course, anything important and real has a Wikipedia entry. 2025 Russia-United States Summit, a.k.a. the Alaska Summit. As Zero Hedge reports, cracks appear in NATO unity ahead of Alaska Summit on Ukraine territorial concessions. Hey, meanwhile in Gaza, Germany's leading newspaper calls murdered Al Jazeera reporter terrorist, posing as a journalist, and Israel in talks to expel Palestinians from Gaza to South Sudan, as essentially the same thing happening in the District of Columbia, maybe the District of America back here in the States. Trump says homeless should leave D.C. immediately, puts the police and the city under federal control, and deploys the National Guard. As below, so below, James.
Yeah, that's an apt summary for you. And I guess if we were going to talk about the Alaska summit and what may or may not come of it, I'm not exactly holding my breath that everything's going to be done and dusted by the end of the weekend and the war over, guys. Come on home. Maybe, but well, I'll believe it when I see it. But I think it might at least be a preparatory opening step towards something that might eventuate into some sort of disarmament process that might take a long time. And meanwhile, the military-industrial defense contractor royalty that we were talking about, like last week, like Palantir and others, are still going ka-ching ka-ching all the way to the bank, making their billions of dollars in contracts off of this never-ending conflict that wasn't it going to end on day one of Trump 2.0? Wasn't that what we were promised dozens and dozens of times on the campaign trail? Oh, wait, now he jokes. Oh, that was just a joke, guys. You didn't take that seriously, did you? You silly rubes. It turns out this kind of negotiation is more complicated than that, especially when it involves 3D chess moves on a obviously a rigged and controlled battlefield that is playing out for the benefit of certain military-industrial contractors and banksters and others, the usual players, and we get to watch the heads of state performing their kabuki puppeteer dance. But anyway, the idea of Russia trying to rush in and try to steal some land before the peace negotiations start is pretty par for the course. I think most militaries tend to do operations like that. This seems like no exception. We'll see what eventuates from it and from this summit entirely. But in the interests of being the new world next week, we are reporting to the news to you as before it happens. There will be something, I'm sure, that will come out of this Alaska summit. At the very least, a statement. Or who knows? Maybe Trump will embarrass Putin and talk about how he's not grateful enough for American help or whatever. Whatever he's going to say, just like he did with Zelensky, right? Well, anyway, I'm sure there will be something interesting to see here.
I'm sure there will be future memes in the making, and I'm sure the Democrats will look for any flimsy excuse to say that these, Putin controls Russia. That, again, one of the big gaslighting lies. Oh, it's Putin, Putin, Putin. It's not who I see him pulling out the chair for at the table. Kind of seems like Netanyahu is the one controlling Putin, if any of these, again, external figures. Definitely going to make for more memes for sure. Russian attack. There was a Konami video game back in the good old Cold War days, but it was spelled R-U-S-H in attack, like rock and roll. Russian attack. But yeah, I mean, campaign promises. Maybe that was just pillow talk. You don't really believe that. Our second story on this New World Next Week, episode 601. Kind of worried about this one, James. I'm hoping maybe you can say, this is no big deal. They all do this. Open source organizations pledge fealty to the United Nations. Linux, LibreOffice, Matrix promote DEI discrimination, and RISE. We're going to learn a new acronym. This is a good one by Brian Lunduk on his Substack. And again, everything we say is always linked up down in the show notes. Who controls open source is a fascinating question. Some of the largest open source foundations, primarily funded by corporations, which by most estimations have not historically been fans of open source or free software. Case in point, the Linux Foundation, which brings in roughly $333 billion a year, heavily funded by corporate sponsors like Microsoft, Hitachi, Meta, and Tencent, all of which derive most of their revenue from proprietary systems. Likewise, Mozilla, bringing in $600 million annually, almost entirely funded by Google. As the saying goes, he who controls the purse strings controls how the money is spent. And of course, we must consider the political control and influence over open source. Many large open source foundations and organizations have deep, often financial ties to political activism organizations, both Mozilla and Wikimedia being some of the more well-known examples. Well, as he writes, buckle up, buttercup, because it's going to get worse. Back in March, the United Nations announced that 16 organizations had signed on to the United Nations Open Source Principles, a set of 8 core principles, which open source organizations are vowing to adhere to. 5 of the 8, fairly obvious, considering the topic not at all surprising, expected things like make open source the standard approach, encourage active participation in open source, make security a priority. Awesome. Okay, great. All those things are good. But 3 of the UN open source principles raise significant red flags, and let's check out those flags. Number 4 on the list, and again, they've all signed on to this. Foster inclusive participation and community building, enabling and facilitating diverse and inclusive contributions. Inclusive, diverse. Over the last several years, these are basically code words for discriminate against people we don't like. Number 7 on the list. This is the RISE. This is the RISE acronym. Recognize the contributions. Incentivize underrepresented groups with internships, promotions, scholarships, bonuses to encourage diversity. Read discrimination. Support underrepresented or marginalized groups with tailored resources to ensure equitable outcomes. Read no meritocracy. Meaning, we're told work hard and you'll get ahead, and then you see other people who didn't get further. And the E, empower diverse individuals with leadership roles in order to promote DEI. It is, in essence, corporate speak, checklist for encouraging discrimination. Remember, Blackwater, Clear Channel, those are out. Z and iHeart are in. Which brings us to the last UN open source principle, the one which quite possibly raises the biggest flag of all, number 8 on the list, sustain and scale, supporting the development of solutions that meet the evolving needs of the UN system and beyond. Open source organizations which sign on to this compact are pledging to support the development of solutions that meet the needs of the United Nations. Or put another way, these orgs are pledging to do the bidding of the UN, whatever that might be, whatever next new catalyzing catastrophic event they have all got to get behind to knock you off of your banks or knock you off of your internet accounts. Which open source organizations are we talking about? The Linux Foundation, the GNOME Foundation, Eclipse Foundation, the Document Foundation, which is essentially LibreOffice, and so many others. Heck, even Nextcloud and Matrix have signed on, Matrix being one of the open source alternatives to places like Discord. James?
Yes. Well, James, I am not going to tell you that this is no big deal and that everybody's doing it. You know, just that very last part is just concerning because, hey, I was using OpenOffice until the open community told me, oh, don't do that. You got to use LibreOffice these days. Well, now what do I use? Anyway, this is a concerning thing for a number of reasons. And maybe we can contextualize this and use this as a learning opportunity because it's a good idea to remind ourselves what these things actually mean. Because there is a real answer to that question, who controls open source? I understand why Lunduk would open with that as the sort of framing question of this. But the question is answered quite simply, nobody. Nobody owns or controls open source. Because open source is simply a bare-bones concept, so let's lay it out for people. In the same way that a lot of terms get thrown around, for example, the non-aggression principle that underlines voluntarism is not an entire ethical moral philosophy. It's a good thing, but it's just one tiny, necessary, but not sufficient part of an entire ethical philosophy. In the same way, open source, yeah, is a good thing, but it's just one tiny part of a much bigger web of things that need to be considered when we're looking at, for example, software or journalism. Because as you know, open source intelligence news was the tagline of CorbettReport.com going back to its very inception. What does that mean? It means that I publish the links to my references. When I make a reference, I'll give you the links. That's the open source nature of the journalism that I do. That's all it means. So I could still be terrible and very bad at what I do, but I could be open source. Or I could be really good at what I do and be open source. The quality of it is not determined by the open sourceness of it. Open source is a good thing, but it isn't the be-all and end-all. So all of these big foundations that are running these big open source projects are signing up to the UN, and cynically, and perhaps most hopefully, you could say they're doing it because they want, you know, the UN participation, you know, laurel on their crown. But what does any of this wishy-washy, mealy-mouth language actually means? Empowering individuals and communities, or enabling and facilitating diverse and inclusive? I mean, that can mean absolutely anything. So, cynically, one could imagine one would be like, okay, whatever, sure, yeah, but what does it actually mean? But more realistically, I mean, obviously this is part of the UN gobbledygook globalese speak that is meant to spin the webs around the public. Oh, it sounds so wonderful and feel good, but what does it actually mean in reality? I guess we will find out, because this open source principles document is apparently quite new. But here's a little research assignment for the would-be budding researchers out there. Can someone find me the actual UN post or PDF or whatever they have of the open source principles as adopted by this DTF, whatever it is, body that's some, you know, subcommittee of some UN committee or whatever it is? I can find their press releases about all the organizations signing up to this, but I cannot find the actual original, here is the document that they're talking about. Anyway, I just thought that would be interesting to contextualize this whole story. But anyway, in the meantime, update, since this Lunduk story was published, it's now even worse. Milestone, UN open source principles endorsements reach 60, including the government of the French Republic. The government of France has signed up to this UN open source principles, so it just keeps getting worse. Surprise, surprise, globalists love globalese. But again, let's just separate what's going on here. Open source is a good thing, but what does it actually mean and what's it embedded in? And that's when you get into the politics of all of, you know, Linux and Mozilla and organizations like that.
I covered this story on my Tuesday technology-focused Morning Monarchy. I might have the links, James. I know I was reading from, maybe that is just the press release, but it did have the points that we, the red flags that we highlighted in yellow highlighter. So, ooh, I might have that one for you before anybody else actually hears this episode, James. It is open source is always capitalized in this article, I noticed. And even just then, thinking, it's like, I don't think that's a thing, you know, I'm a word nerd. I don't think that's a thing you capitalize. And yeah, Pepsi, Chevron, they sponsor the arts because they care. They care about theater. They just want to get some tax write-offs. And you don't want to, again, the wind is blowing in a slightly different direction now, so you don't want to get left behind by the new corporate changes. That's why Bezos and others are smart to kind of readjust themselves for Trump 2.0. But an interesting one. For our third and final story, Tornado Cash co-founder found guilty on one of three charges after jury deadlock. James, I didn't really know anything about this story. A Manhattan jury found Tornado Cash co-founder and developer Roman Storm, if that is his real name, guilty of charges related to conspiracy to run an unlicensed money business. That's our scam, buddy. Yeah, the poors won't get a chance to print their own money. Get out of here. In a Wednesday decision in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York, which always generally relates to the biggest financial stories, which also relate to some of the biggest 9/11 stories for some reason, Storm was found guilty of one felony charge related to his role at Tornado Cash, according to court reports from Inner City Press. The jury convicted Roman on conspiracy to run an unlicensed money transmittal business, which carries a maximum sentence of 5 years in a cage. No unanimity was reached on charges of conspiracy to commit money laundering, nor on conspiracy to violate North Korea sanctions, because that'll get you in big trouble. They didn't get Diddy on the RICO charges either. After 4 days of deliberations, jurors in the trial informed the court they were deadlocked on certain charges, prompting the judge to go, get back in there and work it out. You gotta reach a unanimous verdict. The prosecutor's case focused on presenting witnesses, mainly from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Internal Revenue Service, and hackers, who of course probably been busted and were forced into, you know, black hatting for the feds, testify that Storm had the ability to modify Tornado Cash's code to prevent illicit use by criminals, but chose not to. Storm's legal team put forth its own experts, including Ethereum core developer Preston Van Loon and Naxo co-founder Matthew Edman. The Tornado Cash co-founder indicted August 2023 for money laundering, conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitter, and conspiracy to violate U.S. sanctions. So wait, who's sanctioning who here? Storm pleaded not guilty and had been free on bail since his arraignment. That would have been his chance to run away to Italy like he's Jimmy Kimmel. But Judge Catherine Faia reportedly said during Storm's trial that she was being mindful of other crypto-related cases, of course including FTX's scam Bankman fraud, former OpenSea product manager Nathaniel Chastain, and OneCoin co-founder Carl Greenwood. All three, whose cases were litigated by the Southern District of New York, sentenced to serve time in prison. Storm's sentencing hearing has yet to be scheduled, and prior to and throughout the trial, he claimed to be innocent. That's what they all do. Supporters of the Tornado Cash co-founder contributed more than $3 million to his legal defense fund. Among those who donated the most were Ethereum co-founder Vitalik Buterin, Paradigm founder Matt Huang, and the Ethereum Foundation. In related crypto news from news.bitcoin.com, nothing left to use. Monero reorganization and Samurai takedown spark privacy doomsday talk. And know your customer. KYC, the quiet kill switch. James, a lot of moves really quickly here in the crypto sphere as crypto is pretty much booming. What is it? Oh, damn. As I speak to, this might be the new high. Oh, definitely. $124,224. So that might be why the big interest right now.
Oh, absolutely. And in really, this is just the culmination of what I have been talking about and warning about for, I don't know, a decade now, at least, in the crypto space. Because, of course, we have all the crypto bros that have moved into the space that only care about one thing, number go up. That's it. Who cares? Whatever. Let me sign and my tax compliance. Here's my, you know, blood sample and my next of kin and my government ID and whatever you want. Comply, comply, comply. And yay, look, number go up. But what can you do with that number once it goes up? Not as much as you could have if people had actually cared about what crypto was supposed to be about, or at least the way it was sold in the freedom-loving spaces 15 years ago, which is not compliance. And here we are at the culmination of this, the Trump 2.0 revitalizer. This is the crypto presidency. Yay, all this wonderful stuff. They just had Crypto Week, guys, passing these wonderful acts like the anti-CBDC. Yay, I'm against CBDC. And the Stable Genius Act, right, with the stable coin regime that they are putting in to license and to monitor and to regulate and to control stable coins and how they are issued. And I still have people in my own comment section even saying it's stable coins are a great thing. Yeah, well, right. But what did you even read the Genius Act? Do you understand what's happening? And here we are at Tornado Cash founder getting dragged in for what, money transmitting charges. For those who don't know, Tornado Cash was a coin mixer. It did not handle or control anybody's coins at any point. So essentially what is happening here is that an open source developer of software that truly was not custodial in any way, it didn't control anyone's money, but he is being taken to court for this, which sets an awfully bad precedent for the future of the entire space. And of course, what is going to happen? People who would, the Tornado Cash developers of the future will see that and know, okay, well, if I don't want to go to jail in the US, I won't do this. So this is the state that we're in. Number go up, even as freedom go down. That wasn't the deal that I was interested in back when I first started covering and talking about crypto years and years and years ago, and I'm sure many people will say, well, it was just the inevitable way that it will go. Well, it is the inevitable way it will go if people still only care about number go up. And so, I don't know, stick a coin in it, stick a fork in it, Bitcoin is done, stick a fork in it, crypto is over. I don't know about that yet, but we are certainly getting there with these types of regulatory and judicial moves.
When you stick a coin in it, that makes it go, that gives you a ride. You said confirm, confirm, confirm. My wife, Castbot, she hates even clicking submit on websites. So that's even why on MediaMonarchy.com, you might note it says send or confirm. Yeah. NewWorldNextWeek.com is your source for Corbett Report, USBs, and DVDs. And James, did we ever get much feedback about folks saying, I don't even have a USB port anymore, wondering maybe sort of what the future of our Library of Alexandrias might be? But we also mentioned last week, of course, the Octopus radio play. We have now crossed another anniversary of the death of Danny Casolaro, an original radio play produced by the Media Monarchy Kingdom is there. It's only $20, man. But what I will note is, if you buy more Corbett Report USBs and bundles, which are in stock and ready to ship, then we'll have money to buy more shirts and hoodies that people are asking about. See how that whole kind of thing works? Things are getting tight all around, James. You can tell that the economy is contracting. I have people who have said, oh, not doing so well. My business not doing so well. It is a blessing, and we're thankful that we have had the support that we've had this many years, James. I get the exclusive audio of these episodes that I play after my Morning Monarchy on what I call Monarchy Radio. Again, I'm an old school radio guy. I made essentially my website into a stream. Members only can stream 24/7 music all the time. All my classic shows, everything is all right there. And again, a whole membership that you can join and you can learn things and you can solve problems. And again, as we used to say, James, make community and not conspiracy. That is episode 601, buddy. You doing okay?
I am doing okay, and let me just acknowledge what you said there, because, yeah, I know times are tough for a lot of people, and I'm hearing it from people in my own audience as well, so let me stress, as always, please do not sign up for a Corbett Report membership if it is a financial burden on you. If a few dollars a month is going to break your bank one way or another, Corbett Report support should be the last thing on your list. So please don't do that. If you do have the funds to do that, I, of course, truly appreciate it. And yes, I certainly hope people will take you up on that newworldnextweek.com USB offer because, I lost a significant amount of money on the store last month because I had to order in a bunch of USBs. And so a few more months of that and there won't be a store. So I hope people will, if they can, again, support the work. And yeah, I didn't hear one single person, not one person, said anything at all about USBs or anything. So that just confirms nobody watches till the end of New World Next Week.
Well, here at the end, I'll get a note. It has been nice to be back on YouTube, and I'll send out a hello to Lenny out there, Media Monarchy member, who, again, was a member. Times got tough, having to work extra. So hopefully, again, we've been through these issues before, James. We pretty much came on air after the big Bush-Obama bankster bailout, the economy crash of 2008. And here we are still in August of 2025. If alternative media is valuable to you and resonates with you and you are able, we would love your support. James, there it is, buddy.
There it is. And I think we'll leave it there till next week. James, thank you as always for the stories. Looking forward to doing it again.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.
Take care.